Back at it again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, July 2nd, 2025 on Connecticut Today. Is the political climate ripe for a progressive uprising in the state? That was the primary question I kicked the show off with on a Wednesday. We continue to analyze the recent New York City Democratic mayoral primary. We also chatted about the primary and the use of ranked choice voting with University of New Haven adjunct professor of political science, Dr. Patricia Krause, and Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Hard. CBS News reporter Linda Kenyon in Washington joined us to chat about any progress being made with that massive Trump White House tax and spending bill.
So what the political world saw last week, a week ago this past Tuesday in New York, is that coming to Connecticut here? And I know I've started out talking about this days and days and weeks ago. Ned Lamont's fine. You know, we've had the middle of the road, the moderate Dems. They've even appeared on this show and they've said, hey, no, we like Ned Lamont, but, you know, we want to keep our brethren in the party happy. So we have to have a wide tent here. I don't know. I'm starting to think, honestly, that you could see a replay of what happened in New York. You could see it here. You could see, I honestly think, the far left wing of the Democratic Party put on their working boots, get their hammers and sickles out. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. And maybe defeat Ned Lamont. I honestly think so. Now, our buddy, our pal, Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media, he's going to be on later today. Dan wrote a great story about that, talking about some high-ranking Democrats. But I ran across this. And are we starting to see a real blowback to the fact that Ned Lamont is a centrist and maybe being a centrist Democrat in this state, maybe that just doesn't work. Maybe, honestly, maybe it just doesn't work. Story here, my buddy, my pal, Paul Bass, aside the New Haven Independent, they talk again about this veto that Governor Ned Lamont did with this housing bill. Now, having said that, you would have thought, and forgive me with this language here, but this is the only way I can categorize this, you would think that Ned Lamont nailed Jesus H. Christ to the cross again with this housing bill veto. The Democrats in this state, this is their war cry now, the housing bill. They are treating this veto by the governor here as the end of the world, which it's not. And the governor said he wants a bill like this. He just wants, as he said, he wants a better bill. But my God, some of the stuff you're reading, like this here in the New Haven Independent, veto prompts intra-party fury. So they have a sitting governor, the Democrats, doing a blue state, and they're not happy because a couple of bills, he said, one he didn't like, the, you know, paying striking workers unemployment. He said, no, that kills jobs. And the other one, he said, well, he wants a housing bill, but we need to make it a better one. But you would think that it is, he just killed someone, for God's sake. And this is a story by my friend Paul Bass in the New Haven Independent. It starts out, I just want to give you a couple of paragraphs here. One sentence, 17 words. Apparently, New Haven Democratic State Rep Roland Lamar, who's a very, 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 very progressive guy. You know what he wrote about the governor here? And I guess Paul found this. One sentence, 17 words, and he put this, I guess, on social media. Listen to this. This is what the governor's own party is saying about him because he's not enough of a leftist kook. Because he said, listen, I don't like this bill. A lot of mayors, a lot of first select women don't like this. They say, hey, we got to do better here. Roland Lamar, who's been up there forever, he's another one of these guys that is serving his 37th term in Hartford, whatever. He puts, quote, at the end of the day, He really is just the governor of Greenwich and associated lands. Oh, oh. Folks, do you understand what's going on here? This is a sitting Democratic governor in a blue state, and he's getting torched. He's getting viscerally pounded rhetorically by some of his own party members because this housing bill was like communion to them, and the governor just tossed it all on the floor. Even though he says we're coming back in a special session to, you know, try and end up doing this better. But a guy like Roland Lamar says at the end of the day, he really is just the governor of Greenwich and associated lands. Oh, my God. They're looking to put the political shiv in Ned Lamont's back. Lamar's represented New Haven's 96th General Assembly District for 15 years. There you go. Another guy in his eighth term in Hartford sees the world only through his lenses. He was among the Democrats who felt betrayed so much that he took to Facebook to not just disagree, but to question the very mission of the governor of his own party. Oh, my God, it's a freaking soap opera with these people. Relax. Ned Lamont didn't kill your puppy. He didn't take his ball and go home. He vetoed a bill that, yeah, okay, he was for before he was against it. That's his prerogative. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So what happens? You tell me. And here's my question to start the day. This unending temper tantrum from the Democrats in the General Assembly is not over. I mean, even though the governor said, hey, we're going to get back together and do this bill, they're crying, they're stomping their feet, they're banging their heads on the wall because he didn't like the bill. Oh, my God, you people, relax. Act like adults. Should Connecticut Democrats be worried about Governor Lamont possibly losing a primary to a left-leaning progressive challenger? That's my question. What do you think? Is the far left of this party going to stomp their feet, yell and cry, guys like Roland Lamar, Martin Looney, Bob Duff, Matt Ritter, Julie Kushner, are they going to continue to act like petulant little children because how dare the governor use his executive authority and say, this bill sucks. Let's make a better one together. Are they going to hound him out of a run again and hand the governorship to Ryan Fazio? To Aaron Stewart? They could, and I'll tell you why that might happen straight ahead, but you let me know. Should the Connecticut Democrats be worried about Governor Ned Lamont possibly losing a primary to a left-leaning progressive challenger? Is that, what do you think? Is that secretly what the Democrats want? Is Ned Lamont, Governor Ned Lamont, who has done just about everything for organized labor, for the abortion crowd, for the anti-gun crowd, do they want him out? So are we witnessing the turning of the Connecticut Democratic Party here? Because think about this brawl that's going on here, and you got to read this story. If you have online access, go to the New Haven Independent. My buddy, my pal from long ago, another radio station, Paul Bass, runs a great micro site here, the New Haven Independent. Veto prompts intra-party fury here. Talking about a comment from longtime New Haven Democratic State Rep. Roland Lamar. Here's what he said about his boss. He's not saying this. Listen to this. Roland Lamar's not saying this about Ryan Fazio, our friend from Greenwich, who may run on the Republican side. He says, quote, at the end of the day, he really is just the governor of Greenwich and associated lands. My God, is everybody throwing a temper tantrum because of this freaking housing bill? What did Ned Lamont kill your little puppy? Oh, That's okay. He'll get you another one. Oh, my God. Shut up. I mean, it's so bad. We had Carrie Wood on yesterday from Weathersfield and Rocky Hill. She's getting together with she did signing her and about 25 other, two dozen or so other Democratic state reps, putting out a statement saying, hey, this guy's been a solid governor and people like him. Is this the disconnect with the Democratic Party? Because Ned Lamont is not a screaming leftist? They want to trash the guy? Rumblings now that according to Daily Ructions, Kevin Rennie, that his lieutenant governor's people are trying to shank him in the back. My God, and the guy's got well over 50% approval. Is this how psychotic the modern day Connecticut Democratic Party is? Seriously, you tell me, you Connecticut Democrats out there, why is your party trying to shank a governor that has really solid numbers? Why is that? You tell me. Is your party going all Mom Donnie here? Is this a Zohran fever? It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. You leftists out there. You got a guy that's got well over 50% approval. If he wants a third run, he can finally have it. I guess he's not enough of a leftist for you. Jeez. Bill O'Neill is spinning in his grave. So is Ella Grasso. I have done a lot of segments on this program regarding ranked choice voting, where in its basic form, you just rank the choice of candidates. 1 to 3, 1 to 4, 1 to 5. It's been out there. New York City has used it before. But now it's in the spotlight again because of this massive political, in some people's minds, upset last week. So what about ranked choice voting? Is this the way to really go? It's being debated up in Hartford. Let's get the opinion on that and the race itself. University of New Haven adjunct professor of political science, Dr. Patricia Krause, joins us to chat about these things. Dr. Krause, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Before we get to the actual outcome and what this may portend for even Connecticut Democrats here, which is now being bandied about on shows like mine, ranked choice voting, New York has used this before. Other states have used this before. Other cities, big and small, have used this before. But I think Mr. Mamdani's win here, Dr. Krause, really put this in maybe a needed spotlight for discussion.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it comes into the realm of discussion when people don't like the outcome, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. You know, the same thing happened in Alaska not too long ago with one of their races. So, I think that it's people that want a different outcome that complain about it the loudest. You know, in some ways, mm-hmm. it makes the most sense to use a system, you know, like ranked choice, because it's very clear. You know, you have states that use things where if somebody doesn't get, you know, the majority of the vote, you mm-hmm. have to go to a runoff. And
yeah.
Sometimes you end up with sort of these nonstop races. You know, we had that recently in Bridgeport.
Oh, how well I know.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, it's just at some point you get this election fatigue where people are like, I don't even know what I'm voting for anymore. And I think that was the case in Bridgeport. Where by the time they got around to sorting that all out, yeah. people were just tired of having to keep going to vote. So I think, you know, with something like ranked choice voting, you take that away and, you know, you have an outcome that's determined, that, you know, solidified by the end of the race. So obviously there's pros and cons to yeah. any type of voting that you use. But, you know, most of the criticism that I see comes from people that are unhappy with the outcome.
The thing that and I'm kind of on the fence about it, Dr. Krause. I know that there's a bill in Hartford, but it would make it mandatory. It would not make it mandatory. It would not be used for the state house and senate, which I have a problem with. But the thing I do like about it, and as it's been explained to me, and I've seen this, and I can understand this, it keeps at least in the minds of some candidates to say, hey, wait a minute. I might not be the first choice to a lot of people, but I can't be a total jerk or a total moron because I may be somebody's second or third choice.
Right.
And to me, that's kind of, that to me might alter campaigning a little bit or maybe put some fresh thinking in saying, okay, I have my core issue, but if my top, the people who rank me number one, you know, only vote on that core issue, what would the other people be looking for me to say? You know what I mean?
Right. And I think that there is some validity to that argument because you're right. You know, it's much easier to just sort of outright win a primary or win an election when you focus on issues that mean the most to sort of your core constituency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The people that, like you said, that you think are going to get you across the line. Whereas with ranked choice voting, you probably have to have a broader perspective on the issues and express that. I have an issue if the state of Connecticut doesn't do this consistently with
yes.
every election,
mm-hmm.
because that, I think, just leads to confusion
sure.
for voters. And the last thing we need to do is confuse voters any more than they're already confused sometimes with
yeah,
election.
I believe, Dr. Krause, if we're going to have it, then we should have it for as many races on all
correct.
Levels of state, all the way up to our Senate members, our House
right.
members, our governor, our gubernatorial members. But again, you know, Dr. Krause, you and I, you doing what you do, me doing what I do here, we both know there. I don't think there's a real appetite for more challenges. You know,
right.
you know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, I think you're going to have those situations no matter what type of system you use.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the issues kind of across the United States when we talk about elections is that states don't use the same types of voting systems,
mm-hmm.
right? So some use computers and some use, like we in Connecticut, we use the scanning system.
Yep. Yep.
There's other states that, you know, they use, you know, different types of methods
mm-hmm.
because federally you can't dictate that to states.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to take that away from the state. I think that states have every right to decide how to conduct elections. But when you have these different types of voting methods, then challenges are going to come up.
Absolutely. Sure.
You know, whether ballots are counted correctly or, you know, the computer's glitched or, you know, can they be hacked into? So these types of issues I think you're going to have across the board, whether you use, you know, what we call first past the post, right? Whoever
mm-hmm.
wins the majority gets the wins, or whether you're using ranked choice voting.
So let's talk, if we can, to wrap up here briefly about that New York race and what it portends. You know, I was telling my audience
right.
on a couple of occasions, I remember distinctly about 10 years ago, I remember watching television. I was in my bedroom typing away, doing some show prep, and I see, well, here comes Donald Trump, and he's running for the White House. And he came down the golden staircase, and I, like a lot of other people, I went, yeah, right, this is to pump the ratings
yep.
for The Apprentice. The guy's smart. He gets his 30 seconds of video on national television, whatever. Well, we all know what happened. And over the years, I've said, yeah, people laugh at him all he wants. He changed the Republican Party. MAGA movement,
right.
whatever, that's not to
right.
be debated. Are we starting to see that now? And I kept saying this for years, Dr. Krause. It's coming for the Democratic Party. May not be here yet, but does that Zohran Mamdani win? Oh, I know it's only a primary and it's only in New York City, but is this kind of the smoke now bubbling up on the other side? Because, you know, if it happened on one side, it's probably going to happen on the other side.
Right. And I think that's exactly what you saw in New York, is that with the Democrats, people are tired of the same old thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have Adams, who got his, you know, the charges wiped clean.
Yeah.
Never had to face any consequences for what he did. Now, granted, you know, that was done by Trump.
Yeah.
And I think that stuck in, for a lot of Democrats, that sort of stuck in their craw, saying, you know, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually the Democrats see themselves sort of, this is the generalization, but sort of see themselves you know, that if you're going to do something, you should be prosecuted for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have Cuomo, who I think he's just done, you know, that.
I mean, the Cuomo name, as great as it was, that's generational, right? I mean, you're right. He could be the Cuomo name. I still can't say the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge. I still say the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Nobody can. You know, when I talk to my students from New Jersey, they're like, don't say that. Okay.
Always be the Tap, right?
Correct. Yeah. So I think people are just, they're tired of this sort of same old stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now they were offered something different. And, you know, I do have an issue because people, I mean, he's basically said, I'm a social Democrat or socialist Democrat, right?
Yeah.
People are making the leap to communism, and I'm thinking,
yeah,
you know,
I wouldn't go that far. No,
right.
No,
and this is the problem with our education system. Mm-hmm. But he offers something new.
Mm.
And I think if he can prove to voters that, you know, he's going to look out for their best interest, hopefully nothing comes out of the closet, you know, that he's got anything to hide, I think he probably has a good shot of winning the election.
Should Governor Lamont, Professor, in the time we have left here, about a minute, should Governor Lamont be... I mean, look, 2 or 3 weeks ago, everybody's like, well, if he wants to run for a third term, he's a shoo-in. Should he be looking over his shoulder if he decides to go for a third term or not?
I would say probably yes. I mean, any candidate, incumbent or not, needs to be aware of that. Somebody may decide that, you know, 8 years is enough, that, you know, that we need to have some sort of change. So I would say probably somebody in the Democratic Party is considering a run for the governor's office.
And watching the Mamdani blueprint?
Correct. Yep. Because you're right. This is an opportunity. And even though it's just one city, it could, you know, sort of change the path of the Democratic Party.
Mm, absolutely. University of New Haven adjunct professor of political science, Dr. Patricia Krause. Dr. Krause, thank you. We appreciate the time. Have a happy weekend, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Thanks. You too, Paul.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. There you go. Speaking of Connecticut, is it time for a little nutmeg version of Mamdani fever? Yeah. I got to tell you, for people like me and my buddy Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, joining us right now, this is like manna from heaven. Oh, God, is this great. Dan, how are you? How you been?
Great. I don't know about manna from heaven. We would like a nice, quiet summer.
All right. Maybe I went over the rails a little bit. But you wrote a very interesting piece. You chatted with some people, including Connecticut's top Democrat, on this win by Mr. Mamdani, who ran a very skilled campaign. So who did you talk to, Dan, and what did they say?
Well, I talked with a few people, but I focused on the comments by what I call Connecticut's top Democrat, Danbury Mayor Roberto Alves, who is the Democratic state chairman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is the elected Democratic governor, Ned Lamont, the top Democrat? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But Roberto Alves has a great perspective on political strategy as both a mayor of a city, not a large city, but a city, and as the newly appointed last year chief of the Democratic Party. His view is not let us take the Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani and place him in a box in a corner and say he's not one of us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There are two ways to look at this. One is to say this guy Mamdani has ideas that don't represent what we think should happen,
mm-hmm.
and which allow Republicans to paint the Democrats as extremists. Which is what the Republicans are doing. And the other way of looking at it is, gee whiz, nobody else in the Democratic Party is able to sign up millions of new voters. why don't we listen to this guy and hope that we can, as Mayor Alves said, educate those voters, get them under the tent, and then educate them. Let them become lifetime Democratic voters. So that's the debate. And, of course, Mamdani is making it easier by, as we would expect, attempting to soften his image in the many media interviews that he's doing after last Tuesday's surprise victory.
But you do point out in the piece, Dan, I thought quite skillfully, that if this guy is going to want to achieve some of his ideas that may be sellable to people, you know, he does have a few rough edges there that he has to make a choice on. Does he moderate himself or does he modulate himself? Because, you know, he's going to be looked at and examined here with a magnifying glass and a fine-tooth comb here. So I wonder how this plays out over the long, hot summer coming up here.
Yeah, the issue isn't only that he's going to be looked at with a microscope, because what happens in the city of New York is of limited need, is of limited importance to us. Like, we've all seen here in the very adjacent state, where a very good portion of Connecticut is actually part of New York, you know, Greenwich and Stamford and New Canaan. Those are basically exurbs, suburbs, and edge cities to New York. Stamford is a New York edge city, right? Let's be real here. It's not a New England city. It's an edge city of New York, same as Paterson, New Jersey, and Newark. And so so we've seen that unbelievably ineffective New York mayors don't really screw up Connecticut too badly. So the issue is, what does it do to the Democratic Party having this guy as the standard bearer of the largest city?
Yeah.
And so in that regard, you referred to, and I would articulate here, his refusal to condemn the harshest of the anti-Israel slogans, right, with, you know, specifically globalize the Intifada, right? And for listeners who don't know, the Intifada refers to the violent uprisings that occur from time to time by the Palestinians against the Israelis. And that globalize the Intifada is a call to violence. And for Mondani to not, when asked, he does go as far as to say that's not language I use.
Yeah, okay.
And he goes as far as to say that he will, as mayor, seek to increase, not decrease, anti-Semitic education and action against anti-Semitism, right?
Yeah.
So he's saying those things correctly, but he simply will not say that that slogan, globalize the Intifada, is unacceptable. And that, of course, has brought scorn from the likes of House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn, who's not known as an especially conservative Democrat.
You know? Mr. Leader Jeffries, you could tell he had, as my people like to say, Danny, had the agita face there. And yeah, in fact, I was watching over the weekend, and Kristen Welker on Meet the Press, if you've seen the video, she gave him like three chances to basically, you know, dig himself out of a hole, and he refused to. And I'm like, well, okay, all right.
You know. I got to tell you, I wrote the column mostly over the weekend, and I was mostly done, and I had not focused on that question of that Intifada issue.
Sure.
Because to be honest, he said it in one interview with somebody a few weeks back.
Yeah.
And I was willing to say, look, this guy's an extremist in terms of some of his economic policies, maybe not an extremist, but far to the left. But let's just take that other issue off the table, because surely he couldn't have meant that. And then, of course, comes the Meet the Press interview you referred to with Kristen Welker, and it's right back up there in Monday morning's headlines. And I did, in fact, focus on that to some extent.
Yeah. Before we get to the so-called big, beautiful bill, just quickly, I'm going to sound like Dan Hari, cheap Saturday afternoon movie trailer. Could it happen here? Could we have maybe in this cycle? You know, if the governor says, I want to run again, is there enough? And we've talked about this before. But, man, do you have any change of thought here that a Mamdani type could erupt here in Connecticut or not?
Yeah, you know what it takes for a Mamdani type to erupt in Connecticut?
Ballot access.
You know what that would take? No.
Money. Money.
No.
The convention.
No. It would take a Mamdani type being in Connecticut running for office, and there ain't none. Right now we've got Josh Elliott, my friend Josh Elliott, the progressive Democrat, who's openly and vociferously unhappy with the centrist direction of the Governor Lamont.
Yeah.
And he's an excellent policy thinker, Josh Elliott. You say what you will about his politics, but he's not a democratic socialist, and he's not a firebrand.
No.
He's a very smart, very thoughtful, progressive Democrat. That's not the same thing as Mamdani. We don't have a Mamdani in Connecticut. So in order for there to be a Mamdani in Connecticut, there would have to be a Mamdani in Connecticut. And again, this is to take nothing against away from Josh Elliott or any of the other liberals. They're just this is not a tradition that exists right now in this state.
No, you're right. Finally, the so-called, as the White House dubs it, you wanted to touch on the so-called big, beautiful bill. They twisted enough arms in the Senate. J.D. Vance did what he did. They're trying to twist arms in the House, albeit with a very thin margin. What are your thoughts in about the minute we have left on that?
Well, I think everyone in the world believes that the president is going to get it through the House. They had to buy Alaska with Senator Murkowski, and they're going to have to do this. They're going to have to do the same thing with a few holdouts. My hope for Connecticut, and your listeners can watch for my column on this tomorrow, is that the state and local tax deduction limit is increased to $40,000 in both the House and the Senate version. That can't go away. That's not going to go away. And so that's one small benefit to Connecticut's, I would say, upper middle class, but middle class, that we hope maintains itself. And that's going to be a big help to Connecticut to the tune of $1 billion or $2 a year for our taxpayers.
Nice. We like that. We'll watch for your piece tomorrow. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Mr. Haar, have a wonderful 4th of July weekend. And we'll chat next week, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. Don't explode any illegal fireworks.
I'll try not to. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. Yeah, my fireworks, I think I held a sparkler about 10 or 15 years ago. But my days of salutes, cherry bombs, M80s, M100s, Roman candles, the little spinners that we put on the tree, those things, no. My days with those are long, long gone. So it's called colloquially the Big Beautiful Bill. It's actually a big tax and spending bill. Some people think that's beautiful. Some don't. Some people are like, eh, whatever. It finally got through the Senate, but boy, apparently there are some speed bumps in the House. And joining us from D.C., Linda Kenyon, CBS News. Linda, good afternoon. This bill and this July 4th deadline, how are we looking here? Is that a possibility still, or what from your point here?
Well, you know, anytime I look into my crystal ball and say, yes, it's going to happen or it's not going to happen, I tend to be wrong. You know, Congress has been known for pulling a rabbit out of a hat at the last minute. They do so after pulling all-nighters and lengthy, lengthy debates. We saw that happen in the Senate this week, and the bill eventually passed by just one vote, by the way, and that vote came from Vice President J.D. Vance, who as president, the Vice President of the United States, also serves as the President of the Senate, and that includes the task of casting tie-breaking votes. So that's the only way it passed in the Senate. Now, President Trump yesterday said he thought that it would be a bit of an easier lift to pass in the House, but that really is not turning out to be the case. There are a number of House conservatives and moderates who have been coming back and forth to the White House today to meet with some Trump administration officials and with the president himself. He's doing the art of the deal. He's trying to close deals with these folks to support the bill. He has some cabinet members there. He has the head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services here, Dr. Oz. And they're trying to get everybody on board. But some of the House conservatives don't like it for reasons quite different than the House moderates. And when you're trying to appease both sides of an argument, you usually end up stuck in the middle, and stuck seems to be the word right now.
Yeah, and Linda, finally, it's these kind of bills and votes, obviously, we always see where these coalitions can be relatively small in numbers, but when we're talking about bills like this with not a lot of wiggle room, their power almost geometrically expands overnight, depending upon where the bill is.
That is certainly the case, and the House Speaker can only afford to lose according to the latest headcount, 3 Republican votes and still pass this bill. And that's a very difficult thing to do. This bill only passed the first version of it in the House by 1 vote. Mm. Then it went over to the Senate. It was changed dramatically. And so it has to go back to the House for consideration. And the Speaker had told Senate Republicans, look, if you change this bill too much, I barely got it through this first time. Yeah. I don't know if I can get it through the second time. So that's why President Trump is doing very strong lobbying and cajoling and deal making today at the White House to try and get everybody on board.
All right. Linda Kenyon, CBS News. Linda, thank you. Have a happy weekend. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. You too.
Appreciate it.